Good morning. This is At Issue on WGXC 90.7 FM, Acra, Catskill, Hudson. I'm Victor Mandolia.
And I'm Debbie Mayer. And we have a guest.
We have, we're going to be speaking with District Attorney Paul Chyka and Hudson Chief of Police Ed Moore. They're here in the studio with us. We have been covering the heroin epidemic on this show for the past couple of years, and I thought it was time. We had Chief Moore and District Attorney Chyka on a while ago, probably about a year and a half ago, and I wanted to just get together and just hear about some of the new things that are happening, and then try to understand where we are at with opiate addiction and heroin epidemic. As you know, are things getting any better? So welcome. Thanks for joining us. Maybe Chief Moore, you could give us a little bit of a background on where things are going. Are you seeing less heroin? Is it more? Is it, you know, how are the things on the street?
Well, good morning. Thank you for having me here. Appreciate it. In March, I've been here 3 years. So looking at about a 2+ year perspective on the city, and what my observations are and what our effort is. First thing I did when I got here was to initiate some kind of a investigation to just right off the bat to show some kind of enforcement effort, because immediately it was clear to me that there was some open peddling, and we needed to demonstrate that, hey, we're on board and we want to do something. So we entered into a protracted investigation. I wanted it to go about 4 months. It expanded to all the way to December, the first year I was here, and we were able to get 20 or so peddlers, lower-level peddlers, to make a case, working with the DA and the state police on that case. So what that did is that demonstrated, hey, open peddling is something that, you know, we don't want to tolerate. So what's happened is in the ensuing, you know, almost 2 years, it's kind of evolved. Our enforcement efforts have evolved because that original initiative opened up avenues to work with other agencies, opened up the pathways of discussion and sharing information, which has developed. So what I see is what started out as gram arrests has led to recently a couple ounce arrests. And now recently, as last week, we had our first kilogram arrest of cocaine, powder cocaine. So it's the progression of investigations leading up to more and more serious offenders. So the idea being that, you know, we're going to be vigilant, constantly exchanging information so that we can put the drug peddlers on notice. So what the desired effect will be is that hopefully the peddlers will understand that they're at risk, that we're going to be on the job on this thing, always looking, and then perhaps move elsewhere. So that's our strategy, and from one end, from the enforcement end, that's what we plan to do.
And so are you seeing more heroin on the street, though? Is that something that there's been a decrease in? Maybe you could chime in as well, Mr. District Attorney. Is the situation exacerbated, or are we getting a grip on it right now?
When I became an assistant DA and prosecutor back in the early 80s, one of my early projects was to go look through old files, and I organized old files, and I learned a lot from that, because as you know, the courthouse in which we are now working was built in 1907. So the files in the DA's office went from 1907 forward. And looking through those old files as I organized them, because every DA had a different filing system, one of the things I noticed from the late 50s up through 1980 was that every DA had something to say about drug abuse. And without exception, I believe, most everyone was hopeful and optimistic that he was, and it was he,
right.
until Beth Cosolino became DA, of course, that he was successfully combating the scourge of narcotics. Mm-hmm. Well, we know better.
So
I don't know that it's possible for us to gauge right now where we are, mm-hmm. except to say that Hudson and Columbia County is no different than the rest of the nation. Right. Heroin use among young people has doubled in the last 15 years. Many people believe it's as a result of the fact that it's so cheap, and also the fact that synthetic narcotics have been developed and oversubscribed and misprescribed to the point that people became addicted to those synthetic narcotics, which led to them seeking cheaper heroin. Mm-hmm. It's very frustrating for us because heroin is not grown and produced in Columbia County.
Right.
But the Columbia County taxpayers...
You've got to prop up the government of Afghanistan.
Well, must be. But Columbia County taxpayers have to pay me and the chief and our respective staffs, the sheriff. So it's a problem that the federal government has keeping the heroin out, but we suffer, both in terms of the terrible result it has on addicts and their families, mm-hmm. and the persons who... are victimized by their larcenies and thefts and violent behavior, but also the taxpayers that have to pay for all this damage.
Right.
Yeah, that's interesting. Do you want to say a little bit about where it comes from then, since it isn't grown here? I mean, how it gets into the county, not where it's grown, but how does it get here?
We know, globally that the... It started in the Golden Crescent when we were involved in Vietnam. It became Afghanistan became the major player of the Golden Triangle, and now the new player, of course, is Mexico, that is taking a larger percentage of heroin production. So, whereas 87% or so was from Afghanistan at one point, now we see Mexico getting a larger portion. Mm-hmm. So, one of the things we've mentioned this morning is I have a little advantage over the DA in that from an enforcement perspective, I have to protect, let's say, a 2.2 square mile area. And while we might have a concentration of drug problem, I have a small geographic area that if I really work hard and really send a message and really do top-notch enforcement, I can do a better effective job than a larger county or statewide problem. I believe that our little department can make a difference in this small geographic area. Mm-hmm. So it's a combined effort is the only thing that I can think of that would work. So it's the sharing of information. It's working close with the prosecutors. And it's also working with the outside agencies that can interdict the drugs coming into the city. And there's no better example than, I think, last Wednesday, where a kilogram of uncut cocaine was cut off before it got to the city based on information that we developed with the New York State Police. To me, that's the effective way to do it. Let's keep it from coming in. Let's be visible and know that the dealers are at risk. They'll know that they're at risk, and it'll be displaced out of the city of Hudson. So that's selfish for me because I only – my charge is to protect the little city, and that will become a larger issue for the county and state as people move out to the more rural areas that might be deemed safer. So it's coming in, obviously, the vehicles. It's coming in being shipped in, and people are going down to Kingston and other areas to pick it up via a UPS. It's coming in on a train, coming on the thruway, as we saw last week. Mm-hmm. So all different manners of coming into the city. But the message here is that, hey, if we come into this small city, we're going to be at risk of getting picked off and arrested and successfully prosecuted.
Right. So you mentioned the overprescription of opiate medications, and I'm always amazed. I mean, I get a tooth pulled, and then they give you like 30 pills, and it seems a little – much, and I know that like the amount of prescriptions that have gone for opiates have skyrocketed in the last 20 years or so. Do you find that that's still driving the problem? And if so, do your agencies have any oversight into what doctors are doing, or dentists, or you know, other prescribers? Is that something that you would ever handle, or is it more like a DEA or a state board of doctors? I don't know exactly what they're called.
Only recently, Victor, has the legislature begun to tackle that particular issue. And now dealing with the issue of prescription synthetic narcotics, there are certain controls that are in place with respect to the computerization of some of these scripts and communication by and among and between pharmacists and doctors to limit persons from going from one doctor to another and one pharmacy to another. But it's still not enough. I was told some years ago when synthetic narcotics were first invented that the pharmaceutical companies tried to convince many of us that synthetic narcotics were not
completely
addictive.
Safe, right.
Yeah. Well, we know better.
Right.
And that way, but it took us 20 years and so many thousands, if not millions, of lives in the interim, and we're still suffering from that. So it's a major problem, and the legislature has begun to work on it, but we still need to work. And as I say, the results we see every day, combined with the fact that heroin is so cheap, people become addicted to the synthetic narcotics because they got a crick in their neck or something, and then all of a sudden...
Or have legitimate pain, but...
Certainly.
At a certain point that breaks through or whatever. I mean, there's a number of reasons why people get addicted.
I don't mean to minimize the importance of synthetic narcotics for persons who are in pain. I mean, it's a wonderful... Those synthetic narcotics are wonderful drugs for people that need them. Cancer patients, for example. But the fact is... We didn't know what the results were going to be, whether that is a result of some misinformation from the pharmaceutical companies, miseducation by and among the prescribing doctors or not. The fact is, it has happened. But what does happen and what has happened is that people become addicted to the synthetic narcotics, and they continue to get them, and then in turn sell them for many times more than they paid for them with or without their insurance, and then with that money they can double and triple the amount of a number of doses they can achieve for themselves by purchasing heroin.
It's a vicious cycle, it seems.
No, it's interesting. You know, back in the 80s, the AMA told doctors that they were under-prescribing painkillers.
Right.
And, of course, they responded by prescribing them for everything, like you say.
Mm-hmm.
Now that, as the DA says, they're cracking down via their computer database about duplicate prescriptions, now that this is being looked at, well, that leaves folks that are addicted to come to our town and find a way to satisfy their addiction.
Right.
And so we've created the problem. And we have not up to speed on treatment, and... we have a bunch of addicts running around, and we've created an industry in this town of 50 or 60 small-time drug dealers that can get along just fine by feeding into the addiction of these poor people.
Mm-hmm. Years ago, it was very unusual that heroin was, other than in Hudson and places like Philmont and Niverville, it's not so unusual anymore. There's just as much heroin in the Hudson City, in Ichabod Crane and Germantown Central and New Lebanon Central as there is in Hudson.
Right.
It's everywhere. It's in every corner of this county as it is throughout the country.
So in the past, we've covered treatment. We understand that there is no inpatient facility within, I don't know, what, 100 miles or something of here?
I think they just opened one in Dutchess County. A bedded, you know, facility for inpatient.
So that's encouraging.
In Poughkeepsie, across from the St. Francis.
So, I know that in the past you've been critical of the availability of treatment and the ability to get treatment on demand, and if somebody's ready to get clean, it's often impossible to get into treatment quickly. Have there been any efforts on the county level to sort of address any of that? Are you seeing any change? I know that, and I do want to talk a little bit about the anti-heroin drug that the county is providing through Twin Counties. But how do you see the treatment piece of the problem?
Well, I think the most visible treatment piece of the problem here in Columbia County is Judge Nichols' drug court, which is targeted both for low-level addicts. By low-level addicts, I mean those who actually there should be that was a mistake. There is no such thing as a low-level addict. So I don't know what I was thinking about, but he targets for his drug treatment court both persons who are in court because of family court issues, neglect or abuse of children, as well as those people who are there because of a crime that they have committed. And I think it's been very, very successful, although, of course, there are no guarantees of success. But he works very, very hard at it. He works with a team, including a public defender, the Department of Social Services, the Twin County Alcohol and Drug Center, which has a new building down in Simpsonville. And a number of other participants, including all the representatives of all the police agencies, as well as my office. And they are very successful, and Judge Nichols is very successful in that regard. But it's by far from any guarantee. It is helpful, but it is certainly no guarantee that persons who go through drug court will stay clean, because oftentimes...
Well, addiction is a strong
thing. Exactly. Yes, it is.
Are people who are charged with dealing, you know, even if they're a low-level dealer, are they eligible for drug court, or is it only people who, with possession, only possession charges?
Yes, the persons who are profiting from drug sales are not eligible. It's kind of tricky, however, because oftentimes addicts sell small quantities
right.
to
That's
support
really
support
with.
Their habits.
Right.
So it's an issue that is not far from clear cut, and Judge Nichols and his team are aware of that, and they try to.
So on a case by case basis,
yes, they do.
Who are charged with sales may be included there.
They may be, they have to look at it very closely.
Right.
I mean, we assume, and I believe it's safe to say that the drug court team presumes that they're not eligible unless there's some indication that there's something that we don't know about, mm-hmm. simply from the definitions of sale.
I mean, wouldn't what they were caught with, wouldn't that have something to do with it? I mean, obviously somebody who's got a kilo is different than somebody who's got two bags of stuff. Is that?
Certainly, that's a factor.
Mm-hmm. I see.
And I think, Victor, I think that we're smart enough to distinguish in enforcement, and we're smart enough to distinguish between someone who's an addict just supporting his own habit of a gram a day mm-hmm. heroin to someone who's profiting. You know, a lot of these guys that we've arrested lately are not addicts.
Right.
They're simply profiting from the misery of the addicts.
Mm-hmm. There's been a number of not charges, but people have said that there's a new kind of dealing going on. That there's a car and then another car and the car, like, you know, there's never really any exchange from car to car, but mostly going on in the alleys. Is that something that you're hearing? Is it something that is
what I'm hearing and what I'm seeing, which is encouraging, is more participation of our citizens in giving us information, because the tactics change and they adjust to what we're doing.
Right.
So what I've seen since I've been here is that there's more people picking up the phone, telling us this, taking pictures with their cell phones. It just happened a month ago, I believe, on Lower State Street, where this dealing was happening right outside a citizen's house. They told us we were there within an hour and made an arrest. So what I see is a bigger participation. I don't know if it came prior from a lack of trust or just not getting out there or whatever, or maybe the climate's changed. But I think people in this city are starting to get on board to report these things, and then we're being attentive to it and reacting to it. So that's going to help with the problem. But now they try, there's a million different tactics and counter tactics, and this is, of course, what law enforcement is when we talk about drug enforcement.
Right.
Well, the fact is people evolve, people adapt, and we have to...
try to outsmart, and then you have to outsmart.
Exactly.
Right.
And the chief just mentioned that he had his people at this site within an hour. They were there immediately. He made the arrest within an hour.
Mm-hmm. So I know there's been some talk about, like, community watch programs, reviving community watches. Is that something that you'd like to see going forward? I know they're not easy to manage and maintain and even get going. But
you know how I get out and I have these little open talks in the public? The last one I had down at Bliss Towers, there was a lot of open talk about a community watch. They passed around a sign-up sheet, and one person was on it. So, yes, I do think that anything involved, we'll be on board for anything like that. But I think it's just taking time to evolve, to get people on board, to understand and have this trust with the police department, and also that they're that people are living in these neighborhoods, and they're nervous. We get that kind of situation every day where we really don't want to get involved, but... So it's going to take time, I think, and it's an evolving process. But no, we're behind community watches and using privately owned video surveillance and this kind of stuff. So we're on board with that.
There still seems to be, like, pocket problems, basically. You know, like, I mean, Fifth and State comes to mind, where it's like, you know, it's very noisy all the time. There's people out, and it's clear. There's clear dealing going on. So how do you get past that? I know there was talk about cameras over there, but it seems like, you know, there are a number of them as well, but I mean that one's the most obvious one. How do you break through that and so that it changes the culture of what's going on?
Well, we find that for example, when I started, we had an issue at Second and Warren, installed a camera there, and that displaced it. We see on North Fifth Street. And then there's been times my officers could have made arrests but would have been overwhelmed, gathering of 150, 160 people. I have two officers get in the middle of this thing. The decision has to be made. Do we escalate the situation or try to defuse it? So I actually commended my sergeants the last couple incidents, one in July and two in August, that they defused the situation is to bring in more troops and have a big confrontation. And this is the culture now with everything going on, with everything going on in the media. I thought that was the right decision. The way to deal with that is the property owners and using the city ordinances. If you have an unruly residence that you're maintaining, that's the way to go after the problem. It might just displace it. But Fifth Street, I've had a bed and breakfast owner up there, and local property owners are very concerned. Hey, what's going on? I put my life savings in this property, and this is a situation out in the street, and how come I'm not doing anything about it? So the tactic we chose on that was to go after the property owners, and we did. We cited the property owners, so they have to pay fines for having an unruly premises, and try to go at it from that as opposed to a big confrontation where we bring in, you know, 10 or 12 deputies, 10 or 12 troopers, and have a big sweep of the street, a confrontational sweep.
It would seem like selective enforcement as well. I mean, you know, people hang out on various streets all the time. It's tough to go in and just say, you're loitering and we're taking you in. I mean,
after the couple of the incidents, I posted officers on the corner, and that seemed to monitor the situation. That seemed to dampen it somewhat to make it more tolerable.
Right.
But these things are going to flare up, especially in the summertime, and we have to figure out how we're going to address it. But it does, and I did notice since I've been here, it does kind of move around a little bit.
Yeah, for sure. Let's see. Well, I did want to talk a little bit about this this drug. It's called Vivitrol, the Vivitrol program, which the county is providing the drug, is that right? Through Twin Counties, is that how it's working?
That's what I understand.
And but it's being offered to people, inmates who are leaving leaving prison and are settling back in the county. So has there been any thought about offering the drug to people who just want to get off heroin?
Beth Schuster, who has been involved in the combating drug and alcohol abuse in Columbia County for many years, is a big supporter of Vivitrol. It's the problem, of course, is that persons need to want to right. to be cured, and but even more so the cost. I'm told it costs upwards of $10,000 a month,
oh, wow.
and I'm not and I'm
for I'm, one person.
Yes.
Wow.
Yes, that's what I'm told, and I'm not certain of the figure, but that's what I recall Beth having told me. but so I'm told that it is a very very effective drug, and it's just. However, being used in its early stages, and I think it has a great potential.
Mm-hmm.
But as I say, the cost is
right.
is so great. I don't know how it can possibly.
It would seem like it would have to come. The funding would have to come from the state or the federal
government. Yeah,
to go ahead and really attack.
Certainly,
but certainly dealing with the desire and the cravings, I think is tremendous. I mean, it seems like a miracle.
Yes,
in many ways. I hadn't even, until this announcement, I hadn't ever heard of it. I mean,
I had never heard of it until recently either.
And for our listeners, Vivitrol is a drug that actually just prevents, as you take it, the cravings for opiates is just not there. It's pretty incredible.
And how does that compare to methadone?
I think methadone will give you your high, but it dampens the rush. So with methadone or Suboxone, you'll eventually achieve the satisfaction of your craving, but it brings it on slowly, whereas it doesn't have the intense rush of opioid.
And methadone too is addictive.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is exciting.
You're treating a drug with another drug, basically.
Right.
Instead of
But methadone used to be the big solution. There were all those methadone clinics in New York.
Yeah.
And there's still, I mean, we still prescribe it and Suboxone, but this craving is so intense when you're an addict. You know, I'm told that a heroin addict can try to obtain 2 grams of heroin a day, let's say. Well, we're talking in the neighborhood of $300, $400. Per day habit. Now that's the high end of the scale. It's probably what we see is probably $100-$150 a day habit. That's how I look at it. A lot of times, not how much drugs they're doing, but what is the effect?
Right.
I have to come up with $100 a day, or you know, anywhere on that scale, and that of course results in criminal activity in the city of Hudson.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the problem with addiction. And there's no length that someone won't go to obtain that money. You know, we see up the hospital now, people demanding from the doctors up there that they get prescribed the drug. They just can't help themselves.
Mm-hmm.
And we're getting more of those kind of complaints. So I look at it from the terms of what does the addict need to do to satisfy this intense craving.
Right. It's so complicated.
Yeah.
It's like it's really tough. What other drugs do you see? I know that you know often when you have these busts, it's like a little pot, little coke or crack, and then mostly heroin. Is that usually the three that you're seeing?
Yes, thank God. We haven't seen meth. We haven't seen the crystal meth locally. There's been, I think, up in Stockport, the sheriff had a case.
Mm-hmm.
It's interesting. The long-term effects on heroin are not as physically destructive. You know, the problem is the intense addiction.
Right.
But the long-term effects of heroin is not as devastating as,
yeah.
let's say, some of these other drugs.
Yeah.
Even crack, you know, even cocaine. So we see... For example, the kilo that was just taken down was probably, I don't think they tested it, but maybe like 75% pure powder cocaine. We saw some brown heroin.
And where did you take that cocaine down again? I forget.
That was a case that the troopers investigated. We assisted that we developed information that the powder cocaine coming from the city was destined to be stepped on, whacked up, and then sold within the city of Hudson. So that arrest was made right off the thruway in Catskill at the exit where the troopers could safely, as opposed to letting the product get into the city and then have a car chase or something like that. So that was powder. The best I understand is powder cocaine. We just found some heroin up at the Crosswinds. We had that case a month ago. We see a lot of, you know, crack naturally, more so than the powder cocaine. And, of course, marijuana is everywhere. And that's in essence what we see. There's Molly and there's pills, too, out there. Mm-hmm. And I did want to mention before when we were on that discussion, we did establish, you know, through Catholic Charities and the Sheriff's Department a receptacle in our lobby, right, for folks to get rid of these prescription medicines. And, boy, I never thought, you know, we would get so much. We empty the thing weekly, and we have pounds. You figure, how much does a pill weigh, right? And we have 10, 12, 14 pounds of pills.
It takes – it can accept any drug. It doesn't have
Correct.
To be doesn't have to be an opiate or
no,
something
no.
that gets you high.
No, we get – I mean, it's amazing.
Yeah. I just dropped some there myself. That's how I know that. So the – I don't know. Let's say you had all the money that you needed. What would be like the top three things that you would implement to really make an effort on it that isn't being made right now? I'm not saying that you're not making an effort, of course, but you know, there's always a scarce resources. Like what would be the top two or three things that aren't currently being met?
The DA might have a different opinion. Maybe all the answers are right, but I think number one would be to get some kind of inpatient bedded facility for addicts. You know, drugs are sold because there's a demand for the product. If you can diminish the demand for the product, you've solved the problem from the back end. Mm-hmm. And it's sad to see people from all walks of life destroyed by this addiction. So the first thing I would spend money on is some kind of facility that, rather than go through the criminal process, we can bring people into the facility and have them treated and stay there.
People enter a treatment before they enter the criminal justice system.
100%. That would be the first thing I would do.
The chief is right. I wouldn't necessarily agree with his analysis. I don't know that we necessarily need an inpatient facility in Columbia County. However, what I think we do need is, as you say, if we had access to unlimited funds, is the ability to pay for treatment.
Right.
Right now, it is very, very difficult because it's extremely expensive, and many times insurances do not pay for in-house treatment or even outpatient treatment.
Right.
I think if unlimited funds were available to us, I would suggest that such treatment facilities could be compensated by whatever source to which you refer, and that would be both for inpatient treatment and outpatient treatment that is right now so prohibitively expensive for so many persons who are in dire need of treatment. And that's something radically different than I would have said some years ago. Some years ago, I would have said, "We need, you know, we need bigger prisons and more prison cells."
Right.
But we knew with the changing of the Rockefeller drug laws that it just didn't work.
Right.
You know, it didn't work when we just put people in prison and threw away the key.
And it's so tremendously costly, both in finances for the municipalities and for their own lives that are ruined.
That's not to say that there are a great number of people that should be imprisoned and should be in prison for a long time, but it should not be the wholesale imprisonment that we used to have in the 70s, 80s, and 90s, mm-hmm. where we just automatically sent everyone to prison for up to 25 years. For so many offenses when all we were doing was warehousing the people and doing nothing to solve the problem.
So clearly, to a certain extent, you have evolved on, let's just call it the drug war, as it was, you know, at mm-hmm. one time called. But so do you feel that that's something that's happening in law enforcement across the board in general? Are people kind of realizing that as you say, locking people up for drugs is that it's that it is not an effective solution to it. Is that something that in law enforcement circles is accepted as fact?
Well, legislatures reflect the will of the people, and that's how it works. In New York State, the legislature originally enacted these Rockefeller drug laws back in the 60s because we believed, we, the citizens of New York State, believed that this was the way to fix it, and the legislature reflected our views as citizens of New York State and enacted these laws. Well, since then, in recent years, we as a state have determined otherwise, and the legislature has reflected our belief as a whole and have reformed those laws. Mm-hmm. And I think that's pretty accurate throughout the country.
We've had a little bit of time to look back at the states that have legalized marijuana. What are your thoughts on on that? Mike, I don't think that there's going to be a giant shift in your thinking, but maybe I'm wrong.
Well, the marijuana is not at the top of our list. Certainly, heroin and cocaine and narcotics are. Mm-hmm. I'm told that in those states in which marijuana has been legalized, Colorado, for example, some of the persons who were responsible for those law changes have some regrets. But frankly, I'm not familiar enough with the extent to which they've regretted it intelligently comment on it. I'm not in favor of legalization. The decriminalization of small amounts of marijuana has happened, and the sky hasn't fallen. Mm-hmm. That isn't necessarily legalization, because in Colorado, notwithstanding the fact that it's legalized to some degree, as I understand it, the federal law Colorado is still part of the part of the United States. So I'm not exactly sure how that works.
And then there's all the data out there about the gateway drug, okay, and that concerns me. As a police officer, you know, what are we talking here? What's the data on someone experimenting with marijuana and then leading to other drugs that become addictive and problematic? That's the information that should be, which these laws should be considered before any kind of change in the law is done.
But alcohol is the biggest gateway drug of all.
So, you know, so the question is do two wrongs make a right? And so I don't know. I don't know.
I'm on the board of the Alliance for Positive Health, which used to be called the AIDS Council. We are running needle exchanges, syringe exchanges in a number of places, not in Hudson. I think Catholic Charities is handling that. I was wondering what your thoughts. I know we've had a private conversation about it, Chief Moore, but maybe you could just tell us about your thoughts on needle exchange.
We talked about heroin addiction, but we didn't talk about the medical issues associated, which especially now we see a rising rate amongst children and women in contracting HIV through dirty needles.
Right.
So that's the highest demographic we see peaking now. So clearly there should be some access for addicts to get this. They don't have to share needles. And all the other medical problems associated with heroin addiction, cocaine addiction. I've met with Catholic Charities, and they were exploring avenues to distribute needles locally. I support that, it's from looking from the addict's perspective and what we need to do to fix that end of it.
I saw that it was a video that the New York State Chiefs of Police did on syringe exchange. And one of the things that I found really interesting about it was that they said that in communities that have syringe exchanges, their officers are less likely to get a needle stick because the addict will say, I have a syringe in my pocket, but I'm in the needle exchange program, and they will give it up instead of most, running the risk of being arrested, most people are not going to turn over the syringe.
There's more arguments for needle exchange than against. I don't believe it encourages anything, and encourages addiction by having these things available. Mm-hmm. And there's been officers killed by needle sticks, mm-hmm. something we're very aware of. The guys wear certain gloves, and they're very, if you ever watch one of them, an arrest process, what they go through, to check the pockets and stuff so they don't get stuck by a needle.
Right.
It's a real issue amongst police officers today.
Mm-hmm. Do you concur, Mr. District Attorney?
Well, this isn't directly responsive to your question, Victor, but I would like to relate a story and something that I recall that is probably one of the most disturbing pictures that I continue to have in my mind. When I started working as an assistant DA for Charles Inman, he assigned me to try a number of drug cases, and as a result, I worked closely with the Hudson Police at the time, and prosecuted a great number of cases. And the way oftentimes drug cases are investigated and prosecuted is with the use of confidential informants, who themselves are drug addicts. I met a person who is a prostitute and a drug addict and also was engaged in larcenies to support her habit. And at the time, she was addicted to heroin and using up in excess of over $500 a day, even then, of heroin. And the means by which she came about that money were certainly horrific. But in the process, she contracted HIV. And at the time, as you obviously know, at least as well, if not better than I, that was really when we started to see HIV. And this woman was one of the first who I knew that actually contracted the illness here in Columbia County. I then became a public defender, and in fact, I represented this woman a number of times. And at the time, the Columbia County Jail, was behind the courthouse. It's since been knocked down, and we have it out in Greenport. But our ignorance was so profound at the time that the Hudson Police
the whole country was ignorant.
Well. But instead of in the middle of the winter, rather than taking this woman who was in jail at the time for a larceny from the jail to the to city court in the car with the other prisoners, they walked her.
Oh, wow.
with a dog from the jail up 4th Street and then up Warren Street to the jail. And it's certainly a very disturbing sight, and I continue to think about that. She died about a year later, and I visited her at the hospital a few times, and it was, you know, certainly miserable. But I can never forget the fact that in the dead of winter, they rather than taking the chance of contracting the illness themselves within the police car, they walked her from the jail to the.
Well, thankfully, times are different. People have a better understanding of HIV now. So, Mr. District Attorney, you recently won your race. You have been reelected for another 4-year term. Have you announced it? Are you staying on?
Yes. I won my election also. Yes.
So maybe each of you could just tell us a little bit about what your plans for the next term is, and how, you know, what I know that you've had some discussions with Mayor-elect Hamilton, so if you're prepared to talk about any of that, I think it would be great.
Yeah, I'm very fortunate to be here. I love being the police chief here in Hudson. I think it's a city that, when I retired from the troopers, I knew that it was a city that was being progressive and getting improving. You look up and down the Hudson River Valley, not a lot of cities can lay claim to that. We're getting better, doing a lot of great things, and it's something I want to be part of. So my plan for the next couple of years is to remain as chief, hopefully, God willing. And we have a lot of different projects, you know, on the table. I did have a 2-hour walk around the city with the mayor-elect, which I enjoyed. We discussed ideas openly. She had plans for a civilian review board that, you know, we debated the pros and cons of that. Naturally, we talked about the new station, getting a new facility. So I have opinions on that. She has opinions. So it was really good to discuss these different things. My opinion on the civilian review board is I do believe in having transparency in the department. I think that builds trust with our citizens, which is essential for us to do the police work. Mm-hmm. I have no interest in having my officers stand in front of a panel that might be biased or have an agenda. I just want fair treatment mm-hmm. all around for citizen and officer alike.
Right.
Any one of the disciplinary actions that I take is I would gladly open to review to the mayor or whoever she selects. So just as a checks and balances to see that, hey, we appropriately addressed the citizen's concern, we appropriately investigated it, and we had a proper disposition on what we think is a good way to handle that case. Now, I've been fortunate in the last 6 months or so, the citizen complaints have been very few. So if there were a review board, it probably wouldn't be too busy over the last 6 months. But I have no problem at all standing by or demonstrating, you know, how I approached a problem that a citizen had and how it was addressed and how it was disposed of.
Right.
So I have no issues with that at all. The new station is out there. My role, it's funny, no one's ever asked me my role in the new station. I'm not involved. I'm not very political. So it's up to the people that run this city, the government, to see if they can afford a new station where it's going to be. My role is to, when a property is picked or a building is picked, to work with whoever I'm told to design a safe station that's functional.
Mm-hmm.
I believe in a utilitarian thing. I don't believe that we need marble fountains and all this stuff. I think we just need a good, safe, clean building. And certainly where we are now is the pits. It's really bad.
Well,
it's pretty bad.
The chief is too modest, Victor and Debbie, because he was the principal designer of the Livingston, New York State Troopers Barracks.
Right.
Well, that's not exactly a Frank Lloyd Wright, you know, thing, but I do go from the perspective that
if it works for the forces,
but I also I appreciate there's a limited amount of money, and how much can we ask the taxpayers for? I do appreciate all that stuff. So you haven't seen me in the papers or on the radio say, hey, we must have this or we must have that. No, my thinking is where the city deems we will have one, I will work with whoever to build what is the best we can do with what we're given. Mm-hmm. And I think the commissioner feels the same way. And I just hope that within, you know, my lifetime, the guys will get where we are now at 427 was almost 40 years ago, but it was only supposed to be a temporary thing. It's only about 2,300 square feet.
Right.
So, and as far as enforcement, I want to keep this conversation going about sharing resources to bring the best, enforcement and security and feelings of safety we can bring to our citizens. And I think that in this day and age, you have to use all the resources available. I think the taxpayers want that. So what I would look forward to is we've already addressed with the state police the commercial truck traffic that passed right behind us here. And they do an enforcement once a week on commercial vehicles. We need to step up our efforts for speeding in the city. And I've got a little strategy for that. We want to keep the pressure on, of course, with the drug dealing and try to dampen that. And also keep the conversation going with our citizens, because I do think that the trust is building. I do have a sense for that.
Yeah.
Keep working with the district attorney's office and other agencies so that when we do present a criminal case, it's tight and you're not reading in the paper about how we blew it or dropped the ball on evidence or, you know, unprofessional, whatever. I think we've been fortunate the last couple of years, and the district attorney will give me his suggestions if we've done something wrong so we can work towards a successful prosecution. Mm-hmm. So that's the kind of openness that we need, but everything hinges on the folks of the city trusting us and feel that we're responsive to their needs and concerns. And I think as that develops, we have a really nice little police department, and I really do think that, especially with the hirings that we've done, we've got a really good young bunch of people that are hard workers and good, honest. The common thread has to be integrity and honesty for the whole thing to work. Mm-hmm. And I think that we're really, really hitting it good there. And the last point is the mayor-elect did discuss the hiring process and how we can introduce minority officers to, you know, in balance with the department. And of course, we're working with civil service laws as to we're limited in what we can do. So I work with Greg Mosley's group, with the Law Enforcement Diversity Initiative, mm-hmm. to try to get people interested in law enforcement career. So a bunch of things going on, plenty busy, loving it, and appreciative of every day that I'm here in the city. I love it.
I'll just put a little plug in, because when the diversity initiative was starting, one of the things I asked was whether gay people could be a part of it. And, you know, they basically said, well, lesbians can be because it's for women, and black men can, but not white gay men. Right? I think it's sort of a little crazy. I think, you know, with such a sizable gay population in the city, it would be great to have somebody, you know, some gay officers that can have a little better understanding of relationships and other things like that. Like, you know, that would be helpful, I think.
Well, understand that, you know, we're bound by civil service. That we have to get it on the end of getting people interested in looking at this kind of career. We can't look at the civil service list and say, no, we're going to throw this aside and get people because we want this demographic. It doesn't work that way.
But it's about encouraging people to
exactly. take exactly. Exactly. And I think we can assure anybody that we're going to take the best candidate that presents himself or herself on the list, and that's it, regardless of any, whether they're gay or not or what minority belongs. I think the city will benefit by selecting, it sounds cliche, but to select the best person is the way to go.
Right. Yeah, I mean, it's about recruitment, though. I mean, you can encourage people from other communities to say, you know, hey, have you thought about a career in law enforcement? It's a great job, great pay, you know, those kinds of things.
And that's where our hands are tied a little bit. You know, with a small police department, we don't have the resources to have a recruitment detail. This is where...
How many officers do you have?
26. We're chartered for 26 total. So this is where Greg's and Elena's project is interesting to me, because... It works on the other end to get folks interested and acts as a recruiting effort.
Right. If you're just joining us, we are with Chief Ed Moore, the Chief of Police in the City of Hudson, and District Attorney Paul Chyka. He is the Columbia County District Attorney. Mr. Chyka, any ideas about your office going forward?
Well, I must tell you that although Hudson is a very small part of Columbia County in terms of population and area, it has an inordinate influence on the rest of the county, and always has, for good or for ill. And in fact, with the renaissance of Hudson in the last 20 years or so, I think the county as a whole has benefited greatly, more than you might expect, given the fact that it is such a small part of Columbia County in terms of population. And I can also tell you, and although I'm prejudiced in this regard, and I admit it, the hiring of Chief Moore has fostered and increased that renaissance here in Hudson. What I have seen in the police department here in Hudson, and the quality of life that results from the quality of the police work, the cooperation by and among the sheriff's office and the Hudson Police Department and the state police has been increased so well and so dramatically, it affects us all for the better.
I think many people would agree, including myself. Any particular changes going on in at your office or just? I mean,
well,
I don't mean to say this in a bad way, but more of the same, or did you have any other things that you're looking at?
I was a DA from 1988 through 1994. There was one murder in that seven-year period, and that person happened to be caught and was shot and killed in the process of his arrest. I prosecuted a couple cases that of murders that occurred before my terms, but there was one, and none to be prosecuted during that period of time. From January of 2012 through October 9th of 2015, there were zero murders, although there was one or two that occurred before my term that were prosecuted during my term by me, one in particular in Hillsdale. In that 10-year period, no murders. In the last 8 weeks, three. So events are dictating my workload right now.
And do they seem connected? Is it
no? Oh no! One.
One person did them,
Well, as the chief, as a chief will tell you, the first of the three occurred in Hudson, and that was, in all likelihood, drug related. Mm-hmm. The second was that horrific incident in Bell's Pond with the baby, and the most recent was an incident that involved domestic violence.
So not connected really. We're just about out of time. Any quick last words? You got about a minute.
Well, I'm very grateful for you both to have us.
Happy to have you.
Okay, you've got 30 seconds to tell our listeners, what is drug court? What does that mean?
Drug court is an initiative that began some years ago that involves treatment as opposed to incarceration or punishment. And the treatment includes mandatory rehabilitation and mandatory outpatient rehabilitation by His Honor Judge Nichols and his team of drug court personnel who are involved very, very closely in the lives of the drug court persons who are sentenced to drug court.
Great. Thank you both.
So, thank you to our guests, Chief Moore from the City of Hudson Police Department and District Attorney Paul Chyka. Thanks for being here. We have covered the heroin epidemic a number of times on this show, and we will have more on it in a not-too-distant show. We're back next week? No, we're back on the 30th, and then we'll be back on the 6th as well. We have 2 weeks in a row coming up. So, please tune in for that. We just wanted to give a quick plug.
In 2 weeks, we're going to do refugees, right?
Yes, we're going to have a number of clergy members talking about the Syrian refugee crisis and their thoughts on that. So please remember that New Year's Eve is a benefit for the station. This is the we've done this before. New Year's Eve at Half Moon, and all of the proceeds at the door go and support the station here. And there's a Christmas Carol Spectacular with PG6 and Brian Dewan at Spotty Dog. And that is December 19th at 8 p.m. So please come to one or both of those. And we'll be back in 2 weeks. This is Victor Mandolia.
And this is Debbie Mayer.
And this has been At Issue on WGXE 90.7 FM, Agra, Catskill, Hudson.